Welcome to the Georgian Impact Podcast. I'm John Pryle. Today, we're going to be talking about the latest on differential privacy, a technology that is quickly moving from academia into business. And it's not just the big companies that are using it. With the intersection of trust and AI, a hot topic right now, differential privacy is well on its way to becoming an integral part of the conversation. In this episode, we'll be talking about what differential privacy is, why it's important, why every company needs to think about having it as part of its product and technical strategy. I'm thrilled to welcome Chang Liu to the show. Chang is an applied research scientist here at Georgian Partners and leverages her rich experience with analytics and model building to help our portfolio companies. And she's one of our experts in differential privacy. Chang, it's great to be talking with you.
Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. So listen, let's get started. I think we have to start with an issue that's probably not fully understood. But with all this data that's being produced and collected, people kind of assume that data could just be anonymized. They've all heard the term PII, personally identifiable information. They heard and know that it could be removed. But hasn't it been shown in both theory and practice that this anonymization is, I don't know, should I call it an illusion?
Oh, yes, absolutely. We've seen many failure examples, actually. So what happens is that there usually exists other open or public data sets out there that we could potentially link other information and retrieve that personal identifiable information. One example is, so recently, New York City has released a data set on the New York taxi information as a result of the Freedom of Information request. And so the data set includes information such as pickup and delivery time and locations. There's also the price of the fare, how much tip they received. And they thought that just stripping away the license plates, the driver information, this information can be public. And what we've seen is that researchers was actually able to relate that information to celebrity Instagram photos and posts. And so based on what time and location they were using what taxi, they were able to reference back to which celebrity took which taxi, and they could actually figure out if that celebrity tipped or not, or even how much they tipped. So, right. So by just releasing that information and thinking that we stripped away the PIIs, it's not particularly privacy preserving.
Wow. You know, it's scary to me because, you know, they naively or maybe, you know, thought it was okay to send this data out, strip out the PII and everything's good. But it's this integration and going across these different, I guess I'll use the word silos of data, but different data sets allows some really scary things to happen. So do you think the problem has been solved or not solved in terms of what they should be doing, what companies should be doing with data? This is a serious, real problem in putting these pieces together.
Yes, absolutely. So I guess in the past few years, we're all looking into techniques or measures to just move beyond simple anonymization as a strategy. And currently, we're in the age of machine learning that relies on a large information. And this information is often private or contains sensitive information. So without any additional help, I guess no one should really assume that their privacy has been protected. And right. And so, but there's this other field of study that differential privacy, which is also the topic of today's talk, that actually provides mathematical provable privacy guarantees. And this is very interesting because we start to see a lot of the large companies such as Microsoft, Google, Apple, they're all starting to use differential privacy in all of their software offerings to provide that privacy for their users.
Wow. So this is, let me just kind of restate, mathematically provable privacy guarantees. And that's the key element of differential privacy.
That's right.
And we're gonna dig into that. But I think it's probably worth just a few minutes to step back a little bit. You mentioned machine learning is behind almost most software now. And what, you know, to me, it analyzes data. It makes these predictions based on analysis of that data. So with all this proliferation of machine learning, is that one of the key elements that makes differential privacy so important?
Oh, yes, absolutely. So in the past few years, we have gathered so much information and data, and everybody is using machine learning because it's one of the most powerful tools that can process this amount of data and learn from it. And with today's computational power, we can do this in a very efficient way. And we can use this information that we've learned to recognize patterns in the data or even make predictions. And so because machine learning is so powerful, and I guess it's no surprise for you that when we're training a machine learning model, it memorizes the training data in some way. And this training data could be private or contain sensitive information. And therefore, we should be very concerned with the privacy of the machine learning models.
Fascinating. So it's more than just kind of matching the Instagram photos from SARS with the database. It's actually doing this predictions, and it's much closer, you know, to what I see Netflix doing and predicting movies for
right.
me. Now, we'll swing a little bit back and kind of talk about privacy. So what are the new trends that are out there in terms of privacy?
Yeah, so there are always risks associated with collecting so much data and creating a product based on these private data. So we've had in the past cryptography or encryption methods of these data. They've been very popular techniques. However, if they're not engineered correctly, they can be easily compromised. And this is why we believe differential privacy is such a promising technique, because it actually protects individuals' data while preserving statistical information about the entire population, which means that we cannot really identify any particular individual information, but we can still learn from the entire population.
Okay, so I've got my four words, mathematically provable privacy guarantees. I think it's time for me to get your best definition then of kind of what this is all about.
Yeah, okay, so I will try my best. So what differential privacy, so when we say that a particular algorithm is differentially private, what we really mean is that if we're given this random algorithm and we apply this algorithm on two neighboring data sets, which means that they differ by only one record, the probability of getting any particular outcome from these two different data sets should be approximately the same.
Okay, so I got two different data sets. I'm in one of them. I'm not in the other one, but you want your tech team is going to run analysis against these two models, and we want to make sure the results are the same. Otherwise, you might do something about revealing me, right?
Exactly. And so this algorithm should guarantee that every single individual in this data set is protected in the way you described it. So, which means the intuition is that with that particular record or without that particular record, the algorithm should still give the probabilistic way in the similar results with or without you in the data set.
Got that. Okay, and so we're measuring it, and we can tell our companies, hey, look, even though individual records are removed somehow, mm-hmm. you know, it's not quite the same, but not that dissimilar from the taxi database and an Instagram database being merged together. Somehow there's something that allows you to figure things out, and so stripping one person out changes it. So I've kind of got that piece, okay. So obviously we're going to guarantee that I'm okay, I shouldn't be so selfish here, that an individual person is okay, whether that person is in or out of this data set. But I think that's a proof point. Now, I know as I did some reading, and you've been doing so much to teach me along the way here, there's other ways of doing some things to protect the privacy. So let's just talk about a particular technique. And one of them, which is kind of cool for me, and you told me this has been around since the 60s, it is called randomized responses. People are asking questions to a particular survey, but in some cases we're saying, don't answer the question, just flip a coin and you'll put in yes if it's heads and no if it's tails. It just has nothing to do with reality, but it really begins to mess up the data. Is that still something that happens?
Oh, yes. So this is what we call, as you mentioned, the randomized response, which we actually inject noise into the data. And So what you can think of is that in some particular case, so for example, if 50% of the people answer truthfully and the other 50% are just answering based on the coin flip, which we call noise, but as the person collecting this data, I don't really know who is answering based on the coin flip or who is answering truthfully. So I have no way of really identifying your personal information. However, if we think of globally, when we take this information as a whole, we know that 50% of that is noise. So we can actually calculate and backtrack. And because we know that in the noise, we have 50% chance of saying yes and 50% chance of saying no, so we can exactly figure out what is the average answer that we're looking for this population.
That's pretty cool. And what I really like about it is I often hear people talk about signal and noise, and we're trying to find the signal from the noise. And in this case, because we're trying to protect people's privacy, we're putting noise in. That's different, and that's kind of cool. And I do believe I understand the math. So if 1,000 people took this survey and 500 of them flipped a coin, you know about 250 heads, 250 tails, and what's left behind is the real number. So that's really noise that you injected that allows you to remove it. But nobody knows what John Pryle answered.
That's exactly right. Yes.
Now, I've done that. So how do I then measure, what does that mean now in terms of being differentially private? That has nothing to do with differential privacy. That has to do with injecting noise and ensuring the data is private. So now relate that back to me for differential privacy.
Well, so differential privacy is really based on the sensitivity of your algorithm. So for example, when we talk about this randomized response, what we're trying to do perhaps is counting the number of people who said yes and counting the number of people who said no. So based on this sensitivity of the count, then we can really inject noise to a level that we're comfortable with. And as we mentioned before, so differential privacy is a probabilistic guarantee. So we have this margin, the probability, and which we also call the privacy budget, and it's often denoted as epsilon. And and so based on the epsilon, then we can sort of tune how much noise we want to inject into the data set. So in our example, we injected 50% of noise. But if we are okay with less privacy, then we can actually inject less noise. So perhaps only 10% of the population will answer randomly. And So with that, our privacy budget will be much larger.
So I like that you're tying this epsilon, which is cool for me, to a business decision. This is you make a decision on how you want to, and in this case, we're still talking about really modifying data, adding noise to the data. And I guess my model is, look, everybody can knows that a system with 99.9% uptime is good, but it's not acceptable. 99.999 is better, and the techies always love calling that 99s. But it's a business decision. What am I going to invest, and I'm what kind of get? And it's to some degree, it's a service level agreement, and to some degree, it's guarantee. So it really is kind of the same piece. Yes.
Right. So, but we should also take a broader look. It's not only from the technical side, right? So, as you can probably imagine, if we inject noise, then we're taken away from some performance. And in the example, we only use the simple algorithm as counting, but picture we're using machine learning models that's way more complex, and perhaps we cannot actually reverse back to the exact number that we wanted to compute. Then in a lot of times, we may actually lose some accuracy on the model performance because we're injecting this noise. So this is really a business decision as well, because we need to figure out the comfort level that we want our privacy budget to be, well, and how much model performance we want to sacrifice. So we need to find a balance between the two, right?
I like that you hadn't really thought about the trade-off, but in terms of model performance, I think in the case of the randomized response, it's straight math and it's easier. But obviously you have other ways of both adding noise to the data or adding noise to your training data set. So there's lots of places to add noise. And in each one of these cases, you have a measure, but you got to make a business decision as to what's the final impact of the analysis that this machine learning engine is running.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Very cool. So I think I understand why it's so important, but let's use a couple of different examples for sure. The first thing, talk to me about companies' willingness to share data between different companies. So let's talk to me about how that works.
Oh, of course. So incorporating differential privacy in software companies actually opens a lot of opportunities to these companies. Well, so first of all, it adds a level of privacy and it actually builds trust between the company and their customers. And on the other hand, so after building this trust and that customers feel that their information is private, what this potentially could enable is sharing data or models amongst these customers so that the company can actually leverage the information from customers to use for other customers so that we can actually boost the performance of all of these models for the different customers all together.
Sure. So I see two benefits if I have it right. So first of all, I've got more data from multiple companies, therefore more users, and therefore I can have better results because I got better analytics against it. And you're still able to, through this privacy measure, tell these companies better results and you're still nice and safe.
That's exactly right. Mm-hmm.
Are there any other areas where companies are interested in differential privacy besides going against multiple data sets for multiple companies?
Oh yeah, absolutely. So based on this sharing of data, what we could also help is what we call the cold start problem that we see with a lot of software companies. So what happens in the cold start problem is that the data for their customers are in silos. And when a new customer comes on, they have to wait sometimes months to collect enough data from this new partner that we can build a model that performs relatively well for this customer. And while we're waiting for this few months of gathering data, the software companies may often lose opportunities for revenues, or maybe the customer is waiting for too long and have not gotten a good performance, and there's lots of lost opportunities there. And what we could do with the sharing of data is, because of differential privacy and customers are more willing to share data, we can leverage the information from existing customers to help with this new customer so that we can really speed up this entire starting cycle so that we can resolve the cold start problem.
Interesting. So it's the same kind of construct. I have multiple company data together. The first thing we talked about was getting better results. So this is now for somebody new joining the system. They just get up and running that much faster. Time to value is kind of there.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Very cool. So how does a company get started with differential privacy?
Well, I think companies should always start by really understanding their data, the type of data they have, and what models they're using in order to pick the best differentially private techniques for them. So as we mentioned before, so in almost most scenarios, differential privacy will decrease the performance. So it is very crucial to understand how much you're willing to sacrifice in order to achieve the level of privacy that you want. And so therefore, understanding your business and then understanding your data before and make some research and choose the best suitable differential privacy technique. And this can be actually quite challenging and may require some research.
And just for clarity, it's actually used the term choosing the most suitable differential privacy technique. It's really choosing the right privacy protecting technique that can be measured or guaranteed with some differential
right,
privacy.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay. And we talked about adding noise to the data. We mentioned casually a little about training models. I don't want to go into on this call because we may do another follow-on if people want to hear about it. But you can also be injecting noise into models, correct?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. So there's a lot here. So where should people go if they're looking to learn more about this?
Well, so at Georgian here, we've actually put together a white paper, the CEO Guide to Differential Privacy, which is available on our website to download. And it gives a very nice introduction to what differential privacy is, and it explains some use cases of differential privacy. And we're also currently working on developing a open source differential privacy package that will be available to our portfolio companies and potentially available to the public. Therefore, I guess users are encouraged to download the package and give it a try when it's available.
Cool. I'll make sure we put some links to that in our show notes. I just want to go back a little bit more. We've talked to use the word trust a bit, and I want to do a little more and kind of close this on a discussion around trust. So we've spent a lot of time, done a number of podcasts. I think it's critical important for companies to understand what's coming in terms of bias and risk. So I would just like you to help me understand, you know, how companies should be thinking about really making sure they do the right thing in terms of understanding that and communicating how what they're doing is, I guess, trustworthy.
Right. So as you mentioned in the example, so what machines will learn is the data that we feed to the machine. So if we only feed male data, then the machine has never seen a female patient before, then of course we cannot expect the machine to perform well on female patients. So therefore, we have to be really careful on choosing the data that we train the machine with. And which actually leads us to another very interesting research topic that we start to see in the literature, is we've seen researchers starting to think about differentially private techniques to really help alleviate this bias problem, because the intuition is that we're injecting noise into the data set or the training model. And what we're really doing is we're sort of injecting random noise, and this will also help with a more general model that could potentially prevent biases from the machine learning models.
Wow. That's fantastic. So if that's going to help even more. So we've got so many benefits in terms of this technology. I think it's fantastic to see this stuff move from academia to reality. I think it's great to see it go from Facebook and Microsoft to companies that you're working with, smaller companies. I think that's a great to see the technology go so far and wide. Great story, great discussion. Thanks so much for taking the time to be with us, Chong. It's a pleasure.
Thank you so much, John. It's been a pleasure discussing differential privacy.
Thanks for listening. If you like what we're doing, we'd appreciate your telling other people about the show. Better yet, give us a 5-star rating on iTunes or write a review. Doing so will really help ensure that more people can find us. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to the Impact Podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, or wherever you go to find your podcasts.